are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Wednesday, January 30th, and happy one-day anniversary of the one-year anniversary. This is your boy, Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, the sports writer here in the Motor City covering the NBA for the Associated Press and the Detroit News. Pistons follower my whole life and a sports newspaper writer for over a decade as well. January winding down, and is it cold enough for you out there today, by the way? We are going to have probably our biggest month ever. As my phone goes off, looks like Vince Ellis is doing some late night tweeting today. But looks like our biggest month ever here on Locked On Pistons, and that's with a down team, a down franchise, and not a lot of news, a lot of losses. So sounds like you guys are doing your part in spreading the word about the Locked On Pistons podcast. We really appreciate that, and we will do even better in February for you as we look ahead to the trade deadline and whatever happens with this team going forward. But today we're going to run down basically the box score of Tuesday's game against the Milwaukee Bucks. We're also going to talk about that one-day anniversary of the one-year anniversary of the Blake Griffin trade, as every media outlet did a one-year retrospective, and we didn't. We had it marked down, but had the John Horst interview yesterday. Appreciate you guys spreading the word about that one, too. By the way, so we're going to catch up with the one-day anniversary of the one-year anniversary. So, also, we're going to talk about the one thing that should give you hope if you're a Pistons fan looking for some with the rest of this season, if you still have playoff hopes in your rose-colored glasses. But give me a follow, by the way, on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H. Another underscore after that. Also, the Locked On Pistons Twitter account at Locked On Pistons. And check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons - Matt Shook. And while you're in a charitable mood, give us a nice rating and review on iTunes as well so folks can find us as they search for their Pistons podcast, because we know that's what they're needing these days in the cold Arctic weather that we have here in Detroit City. But the Pistons lose to the Milwaukee Bucks on Tuesday, 115-105. I did not watch the game. I'm not going to watch the game. I do this every now and then, last couple years, or last year or so that I've done the podcast. I'll skip a game, and I skipped one on Tuesday as I was covering the Motor City Open Squash International Tournament at the Birmingham Athletic Club. I'll be doing that all week, by the way, and good time. Just some amazing squash players. It's an international sport. A couple Americans actually got a win on Tuesday in the first round. But enough about squash. Well, maybe I'll start the Lockdown Squash podcast sometime soon. But the Pistons are now 21-28 with the loss, 7 games under .500, a new low watermark of the season. 7 games under .500. Now 3 games clear out of the playoffs behind 8th place Charlotte. And while I'm thinking about it, the tiebreaker situation is not good for the Pistons. If you're looking at the last week of the season, Pistons got swept by Charlotte. So, of course, a tie with them means no playoffs. Split with Miami with 1 game left in South Beach. So that's not looking good. Split with Washington with 1 home game left against them. That one becomes the newest, most important game of the season, February 11th at home coming up there. But as I've said all along, you wonder why I harp on it, but it's those red-letter games, the Pistons, and those red-letter games against opponents that are right near them at the end of the Eastern Conference playoff picture, or at the top of the outside of the Eastern Conference playoffs where the Pistons currently reside. Pistons are 5-7 against those not very good teams with 5 red-letter games to go, 2 of them at home and 3 of them on the road. But anyways, a team that doesn't have to worry about that kind of nonsense right now is the Milwaukee Bucks with the best record in basketball. They got the easy win, sweep the season series with Detroit for the first time in their history. So congratulations to John Horst, the general manager, to Mike Budenholzer, the head coach that I wanted, and the Milwaukee Bucks with making it happen. Giannis, 21 points, 11 assists, 8 rebounds, pretty quiet night for him, but spread his wings apparently. And again, I didn't watch this game, just going off the box score today. Bledsoe had 20 points and 7 assists. 16 points for Pat Connaughton. Pat Connaughton, 16 points. I almost fell off my chair when I saw that in the box score. The Bucks were 13 of 32 from 3, 40%. Pistons shot 12 of 37 for 3, 32%. So Pistons shot more and made less from 3. Reggie Jackson had 25 points and 5 assists, tied for his season high in points. Good on him. Of course, he plays well in the game that I don't watch, as I've had to sit through the last 2 years of him struggling mightily, 20 points and 13 rebounds, 3 years, I guess, if you include the last non-Lockdown Pistons season. 20 points and 13 rebounds for Andre Drummond. I saw that he played really well early for the Pistons. And then 18 points and 9 assists and 7 rebounds for Blake Griffin in an inefficient night for him. 19 points off the bench for Luke Kennard, who tied Blake Griffin for the team high in field goal attempts with 16 in the game, despite the fact that Luke played 11 less minutes than Griffin. So Luke the Gunner was out there. That's a new one to see. But it sounds like Bruce Brown got some backup point guard minutes. Don't know how that went, but looking at the numbers, which are, you know, not a great indication, but they could tell you some things. 0 assists, 1 turnover, and a negative 23 plus minus on the game. Not very good from those statistical standpoints. If you guys want to fill me in on Twitter, by the way, on how he did, and maybe I will check out that those minutes on the Fox Sports app or something like that. But Langston, Galloway, and Glenn Robinson III got the start with no Bullock in. Reggie Bullock's got a sprained ankle, which could affect his status and value at the trade deadline coming up in about 8 days. But those guys, Langston and Glenn Robinson III, started and combined for 2 points in 32 minutes from your wings. Great job there. This Glenn Robinson season is going to go down in history, I think. It's unbelievable. I was genuinely excited when they signed him, and boy, I'm an actual idiot for that. But the Pistons continue with a game Thursday in the second of this four-game homestand against Luka Doncic and the Dallas Mavericks, a rematch from last Friday night. And it will probably be the last Dirk Nowitzki appearance in Detroit. If you're looking for somewhere to go to get out of the cold on Thursday night, it might not be a bad idea to get there. And if you're excited about the Pistons still, Dallas will be in on a back-to-back, by the way. So the Pistons have 7 opponents left coming in on second halves of back-to-backs, and they also play 7 back-to-backs themselves. So it's a little bit of a wash there for the rest of the season. But this is one of those opportunities where maybe they have a chance to knock off a tired team on the road that is on the road. Then the Pistons will play Saturday in a matinee 5 o'clock against the Clippers at Little Caesars Arena, and all the drama that Pistons-Clippers bring, as you know. And then Monday, the Pistons will play host to the Denver Nuggets in a game that they will be heavy underdogs, but you never know. Denver, not traditionally a great road team, but we know that they've turned the corner as a franchise and have passed teams like the Detroit Pistons in their dust. But then the Pistons will have a home-and-home with the New York Knicks, starting with the second half of the back-to-back on the road in New York and then coming back home. Those games straddle the February 7th trade deadline. Yes, straddle. Sorry to make that sexual here on Locked on Pistons. But up next, it's been one day since the one-year anniversary, and we were the only media outlet that didn't write anything about it or talk about it. And we're going to do that here about the Blake Griffin trade up next on the Locked on Pistons podcast. But did you get a smart speaker over the holidays? If so, tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked on Pistons. That easy. Hey, Alexa, play podcast Locked on Pistons. There, I got it started there in the house for you. But Amazon Alexa, Echo, Google Home device, Sonos, whatever, go ahead and check it out again. That's play podcast Locked on Pistons.
Yes, sir!
A little bit later on, I'm going to pass along the number that could give Pistons fans some hope about playoff berth if you're into that kind of thing these days. But the Blake Griffin one-year anniversary was yesterday, so happy one-day anniversary of the one-year anniversary when the Pistons on January 29th, 2018, traded Boban, Avery Bradley, Tobias Harris, and a first-round pick to the Los Angeles Clippers for Blake Griffin, Willie Reed, and Bryce Johnson, a couple of guys whose time in Detroit was certainly short. And then Blake Griffin, who's under a monster contract for the next 3 years after this one. And like I said, basically Tobias in a first-round pick. Though the way I look at it, Avery Bradley was an expiring that was valuable for that reason. And then the Clippers, of course, doubled down on that problem by re-signing him this offseason and are certainly regretting that one at this point. Although it seems like Doc Rivers still likes Avery Bradley, even though everyone else has realized that he's bad at this point. But Boban is a salary issue for them and has been so, and it's out of the rotation right now. So not a guy that is helpful to them in any way. So those kind of cancel each other out, in my opinion, or did at the time until the Clippers made their situation worse by bringing Avery Bradley back. So basically Tobias on a first-round pick for Blake Griffin at the end of the day. The debate is, and everyone talked about it, everyone dropped their 2 cents in there, are the Pistons better off after 1 year of the trade. Certainly further from a teardown rebuild situation when you had a three-year deal of $40 million and a little bit less than that over the next couple of years, but reaching that $40 million threshold. And certainly more entrenched in the current era, which becomes the Blake Griffin era when we talk about the highest paid player on the team by a long shot as well. And Tom Gores, by the way, was at Tuesday's game against the Bucks and said the same things he always says. And here's where maybe this is my worst opinion, according to you guys, because I have some opinions that, you know, some of the pro-tank crowd hates and maybe the diehards like, or maybe vice versa when I talk about making a bold move and the Pistons should go get somebody as opposed to floundering and waiting for contracts to come off over 2 years to the point where Blake becomes 31, 32 years old and now he's not as good. And now your centerpiece, the reason that you're actually a team that could do something at some point because you have this very great player, not very great, but just great. And so again, the opinions are kind of all over the place and the hate comes from different directions. But the one opinion that I have that I think you can all agree on that you hate, and hate me and go ahead and hate me for this. I don't mind Tom Gores. I kind of like Tom Gores. And I know that's like sacrilegious to say to Pistons, to people who hate the Pistons and people who still love the Pistons and still have faith in this team. Of course, now in these interviews he talked about, he mixes in some nonsense about how good Andre Drummond is, has a little bit of sentences that don't really make any sense in terms of the things he says. But God willing, I got to believe and I got to hope that this front office is empowered to make the moves that they feel is necessary. And God willing, he would okay a trade to Andre Drummond if they could find someone to take him for some sort of reasonable package. Now, we know that there is some Gore's fascination with Drummond, and that's the one thing that maybe does bother me most about Tom Gores. Not to say that other things don't bother me a little bit too, but I don't mind Tom Gores. I kind of like Tom Gores. This is my controversial opinion that everyone can hate themselves. To me, he buys the team. He comes in. He keeps Joe Dumars around maybe a little bit longer than he should have, a little too long, because he's freaking Joe Dumars. He won a title. He's a Hall of Famer for this franchise. I give him a pass on that. As Joe's mistakes that were made towards basically the whole last half of his time as president of the Pistons. And what does he do next? Tom Gores goes out and pays top dollar to get the guy that everyone wanted in the NBA that offseason, including the Golden State Warriors, in hiring Stan Van Gundy. The only way that he could get him is to give him big money and full autonomy, give him the front office title, give him the president title as well, which is something that a lot of teams were doing at that time. Now, we've seen from Stan Van Gundy and other cases that obviously that turned out to not work out. Budenholzer got stripped before he got fired, or before they parted ways in Atlanta. Doc Rivers lost some front office responsibility. Tom Thibodeau, his timeline kind of mirrored Stan Van Gundy and how those things all kind of worked out there. But, you know, Josh Smith era, Greg Monroe, beginning of Andre Drummond, this was Siberia, right? This was the place that no one wanted to be. It's not too dissimilar from what we're talking about right now, but with Blake Griffin and, a couple of young pieces that are decent, I guess it's a little bit better of a situation, although it's been another cold 5 years or so as an appropriate day to talk about Siberia here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. But you had to overpay and overpromise to Stan Van Gundy, and that's what he did. It wasn't going well for Stan, so Tom Gores bought out the fifth year, paid him $7 million to walk away when the success wasn't there, and made the move that a lot of fans wanted him to make. And what did he do? He brought in a well-thought-of front office, Ed Stefanski, who's been around and had some success in different places. He had to pay out of your pocket. Now, this isn't a salary cap situation or isn't a salary ceiling situation, but they paid for Malik Rose, they had to pay for Sachin Gupta, they had to keep Pat Garrity, who was well thought of, brought in Sammy Gelfand from the Warriors, took a lot of those guys from organizations that paid a lot of money for their front offices, and also with Stan Van Gundy, we talked about the pro scouting that those guys did, which led to some decent trades during the Stan Van Gundy era that obviously Tom Gores had to foot the bill for that too. Paid top dollar for the coach of the year. And again, these are situations where you're not required to spend a certain amount of money. It's an uncapped situation when talking about front offices and coaches and all that kind of stuff. And he goes out and he does it. And he moved the team downtown. I know it's a weird move. It's the Red Wings stadium. Feels a little bit rushed, but I think it's a good one all in all. The arena, Little Caesars Arena, it's grown on me a little bit over the last couple of years. you know, I think people my age are going to be going to games there, more games there in 20 years than people who are, you know, 55 do right now. And then the thing he gets criticized most for, Tom Gores, and everyone says that he was the one who pulled the trigger on the Blake Griffin trade. Well, 1 year later, thank God he did, because where's this team this season without Blake? It's definitely worse when you're talking about Tobias Harris. And everyone talks about how SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, is the guy the Clippers ended up with from that draft. Well, he's not the guy that was picked with the Pistons pick. That was Miles Bridges. And they probably draft Miles Bridges or someone just like that with the pick, just like the Clippers did. But they probably don't make the move and end up flipping that pick along with two future second-round picks for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, because they had Reggie Jackson. They had a point guard that was under a big-money contract for the next 2 years, and maybe they would have liked Gilgeous-Alexander and possibly pulled off a move. But that's like, now we're dealing with two steps of hypotheticals, just because you like the guy that they ended up with one of the picks and not the guy with the other pick. And by the way, I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander a little bit overrated right now. I saw him against Detroit a couple weeks ago. He sucked. Can't really shoot. He's getting under 3 assists and under 10 points a game, playing about 25 minutes as a starting point guard for a good team. I know there's a lot of potential there, but I think that a lot of the people who were really fired up about him in the draft process, I think, are overvaluing him, you know, all the midway through his rookie year and then some, because they don't want to look wrong for overvaluing or overhyping him so much in the draft process. So I think the SGA, and we'll keep an eye on that one over the next few years, but a lot of people talking about how, you know, he's one of the great point guards of the future, I think, you know, pump the brakes a little bit. He's right in that category of point guards with unproven guys that have a lot of question marks, and I would say he's among those guys. But at 12, the choice the Pistons had were Miles Bridges, Jerome Robinson, Michael Porter, Troy Brown, Zaire Smith, Lonnie Walker, Kevin Huerter, Dante DiVincenzo. I mean, that's the list of guys that were available in 12 and realistic picks at that point. None of those guys moved the envelope after a strong, you know, top 10 in that that draft class. And then you'd have, you know, Tobias Harris here and a Walkier. That's not moving the needle much for me, but he goes. Either you get that cap space coming off to go get some more mid-range free agents. And I know the go-to is to say it's like John Luehr and Langston Galloway-type free agents. Well, hopefully you'd go out and sign better free agents than that. But those are the types of value type of situations you'd have. You'd have a worse situation. You still wouldn't be tanking. And now with Blake, and I've said this on the show, and I believe it, Blake could want to trade this summer. I know it's going around because of the bogus report out there, and now Blake's got to answer all these questions, but he could very well want to trade this summer, and I wouldn't blame him for that. And I do think it's something the Pistons should consider even before he comes out and demands it someday, if that is something that happens down the road. And this situation right here, with the amount of money you owe him over the next 3 years, this would be selling high. Now, I don't, you know, the Ringer had that article, Harrison Barnes and Dennis Smith Jr., and that was just like a thought experiment. It wasn't a rumor or a report or something like that. But, you know, I don't like that trade, but if you throw in a couple first-round picks, maybe some other sweeteners to that, I could maybe get behind something like that, like a first-rounder or two, or maybe you throw in Dwight Powell and John Luehr so we could get an advantage on that swap or something like that. But like I said, you know, Dennis Smith Jr. and Harrison Barnes for Blake Griffin. Not nearly enough there, but maybe that's the beginning of you know, another major piece thrown into that deal that could make it a little bit more close. Because you can't go asset for asset on a guy like Blake Griffin. And I know I've said that before. That's like my trade test, the integer test, if it's +1 or -1. I think you've heard me talk about that plenty of times here on the show. But Blake Griffin throws off that math. When you talk about a guy who can be a big three on a championship team right now, that's a little bit more coveted of an asset. So the way I think about it is, maybe there are those Western Conference teams that see Anthony Davis go to the Lakers, if that's what happens, or whatever another big pieces end up with LeBron James this trade deadline or this summer. If you're a Western Conference team, you got to keep up with those Joneses, and maybe a Blake Griffin, who can be one of those guys, maybe push one of those mediocre teams over the hump a little bit in the West, or make an Oklahoma City or something like that. Portland, I mean, when are they going to make a move? Maybe McCollum and a pick and spare parts or something like that to team him with Dame Lillard there, as the backcourt hasn't really proven to be able to go deep into the playoffs. Utah, Denver, I mean, do those teams want to make the next step this summer? Maybe the Lakers themselves get boxed out by Boston for Anthony Davis, and you could bring in Blake to play with LeBron. Obviously, he's got experience in L.A. You know, we'll take the JV package of what they would have offered for Anthony Davis, like the Ingram, Kuzma, and picks, as opposed to Ingram, Ball, Kuzma, and Hart, and picks, or something like that. But please don't send LeVar Ball to Detroit, by the way. But at least there are options this summer with Blake, as opposed to cap room that would just be filled in with mid-range, at best, free agents. Or maybe, again, my thought, as opposed to being conservative and making moves around the margins, this trade deadline, which is what all the smart guys and all the smart Pistons fans are out there proposing, I say go bold this trade deadline if you can, or build around him this summer, make him happy. You know, those are both nice possibilities that I think that they're better than watching Tobias leave for nothing, or even worse, giving him an $188 million five-year extension, which it sounds like is what he wants after he turned down a four-year $80 million offer this past summer from the Clippers. So, you know, good luck winning a championship there with Tobias Harris getting $188 million. So, again, whatever you decide on those routes, I think they're better off than they would have been without Blake Griffin and without that trade. But if your company looking for a new way to reach customers, you guys could be mentioned right here, right now on Locked On Pistons. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with their sponsors that they hear on their favorite daily podcast. Our demo is 98% males with more education and more earning power than traditional media audiences. So have your company go ahead and sponsor Locked On Pistons. Email me at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more. Now, next I'm going to give you guys the number that the Pistons fans could have some hope about. That's next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, which is a proud member of the Locked On Network, your team every day. Well, I got it for you right here, right now. The Pistons ace in the hole. Now, Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer wrote on January 29th, Tuesday, in an article, and I'm writing this one down. He wrote it about the New Orleans Pelicans' options with Anthony Davis, that the Nets, quote, are a virtual playoff lock in the Eastern Conference. And they are playing well. Four games over 500 right now. 538.com basically backs them up with their projections, calling the Nets an 82% playoff team. Still, my opinion is, with Dinwiddie and LeVert out a little bit here, a virtual lock, quote, is a little too strong. So we're going to keep the receipt on that one, by the way. But it got me going. It got me thinking a little bit for a deep dive on the playoff odds. I was going through that today on Tuesday, the strength of schedule and all that kind of stuff. Just been going through some of those numbers. I found a number for you guys here. The number is how many times the Pistons have combined games left this season against the Knicks, the Suns, the Cavs, and the Bulls. I mean, these guys are in full tank mode right now. 5-35 over the past 40, or if you add the four past 10s together. And I guess that actually becomes 4-34 because the Cavs beat the Bulls. So we'll take one win and one loss from that group on both sides, because it's what it is. The reason that these teams are in overdrive for tanking is because there's four teams going for the top three. The top three odds, with the smoothing of the lottery odds that have been going on, those are all the same. But I would argue, by the way, at some point you're going to have some kind of dignity, and the fact that you might lose 1.5% of a chance for Zion Williamson becomes less important than the fact that you're embarrassing yourself every night. So maybe dropping from 14% to 12.5% for the number one, or the 4% from 52% to 48% to be in the top four, maybe that wouldn't be so bad, and to be the fourth worst team in the league wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. And maybe that will actually happen, and maybe these teams will get a little bit frisky at the very end of the season. But right now, these teams are a complete wasteland. And the Pistons play, by the way, here's the number. The Pistons play those teams, those four teams, a combined eight games the rest of the season. They got three against the Knicks, including next week, with two of those. One against the Suns, two against the Cavs, and two more against the Chicago Bulls. So eight games right there. One caveat, one issue with the eight games is that only two of those games are home at Little Caesars Arena, and six are on the road. So even though you're going up against horrible tanking teams, it's still, you know, it's not easy for the Pistons to go out and win a road game. But that is a real thing. That is a real thing to have some optimism left playing those four teams, which is all a part of a package that is the 27th easiest schedule left in the NBA. In contrast, Brooklyn, Miami, and Charlotte, teams at Charlotte, did I just say Charlotte? Charlotte. Three teams that the Pistons are chasing, those guys check in with the fourth, sixth, and seventh toughest schedules the rest of the seasons. Their games left against the teams that I'm calling the offensive four, Brooklyn's got three, Miami's got four, and Charlotte has two games left against those teams, while the Pistons have eight. So really, some chances to gain some ground back and chew up the dregs of the NBA. Washington, by the way, who's still a half game behind Detroit, what have they been up to, has six games left against those four. So Washington's got a pretty good chance of cleaning up on the dregs as well. Orlando, they're hanging around somewhat. They have five games left against those four teams. Now, according to 538.com, the Pistons have a 48% chance of making the playoffs in the Eastern Conference, basically a coin flip. Now, interestingly enough, that's the 10th highest percentage of teams in the Eastern Conference. So even though they're just under 50%, that's two spots below the eighth best odds in the Eastern Conference. Now, it makes sense if you think about the math that that there would be more teams that have a 50% chance of making it, because those aren't 100% chances of making it. So and the other nine teams ahead of the Pistons all have 50% or better chances of making the playoffs. So what do you think? Do you have a little bit of confidence in it because of that? Let us know. And also, it's trade deadline season, so open lines for you guys to give your opinion on any of the rumors out there. Marc Gasol, I know we didn't really hit that hard this week since the more specific rumor came that the Pistons checked in about him, but we did talk about that last week kind of in tandem with the Mike Conley and Marc Gasol situation, and we'll see if anything else comes of that. And, you know, let's try to ignore the fake rumors, but I think at this point, the purports, the rumors, they're kind of just sparking conversations, sparking possibilities of things for us to keep in mind and things for us to give our opinion about. So 810-666-1546, that's the number to call, leave a voicemail. We'll play it here on Locked On Pistons, 810-666-1546. This is your boy, Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, saying thanks for listening, everyone, and we will talk to you guys tomorrow. So try to stay warm out there.